This is a GRDC podcast.
Hello, I'm Camilla Plunkett. Earlier this year, we brought you a podcast, Novel Pest Solutions, about the newest GRDC investment, the Australian Grains Pest Innovation Program, or more commonly referred to as AgPIP. Novel Pest Solutions discusses the groundbreaking research that is now underway, seeking new ways to control insects and pests in Australian grain crops. Following on from Novel Pest Solutions, I'm delving deeper into one of AgPIP's main research pillars, the investigation of endosymbionts, a game-changing bacteria in insect species, and I'm here at the University of Melbourne's Pest and Environmental Adaptation Research Group Lab with lead senior scientist Dr. Perrin Ross to find out more.
I'm working on a large collaborative project between the University of Melbourne and CSER Australia called the Australian Grains Pest Innovation Program. And it's all about trying to find new ways to control insect pests in Australia. So at the moment, insecticide resistance is a really large and emerging problem in Australia, and we need to find new ways to control these pests without using traditional insecticides. So the project that I'm working on is really about a type of control program that relies on using bacteria that live inside insects called endosymbionts. So endosymbionts are tiny bacteria that live inside insects, and they're incredibly widespread. So they're found in anything from butterflies and mosquitoes to moths and bees, and they have really diverse effects on the insects that they live inside. And so they can do things like alter the reproduction of their insect host, so make them produce more offspring. They can change their behavior. They can affect their ability to transmit viruses. And they can also do other things like protect their host against predators and parasitoids. And we want to use these effects that endosymbionts have to try to find ways to control insect pest populations. And so we can do that by taking endosymbionts from natural insect populations and transferring them to other insects that cause a problem to crops in Australia. And we want to try to introduce effects that are beneficial. So this could include things like reducing the ability of aphids to spread plant viruses. It could change the reproduction of insects so that they produce fewer offspring if we want to suppress their population. And it could also include things like increasing the production of beneficial insects. So an example of that would be using a type of bacteria that increases the proportion of females that are produced. So if you've got a parasitoid wasp that you're releasing into the field, only the females will be useful because they're the ones that will hunt down and attack pests. And so if we can increase the proportion of offspring that are female, that can actually increase their production success.
So it's estimated there are $350 million in crop losses across Australia from certain insects and pests. And this is a five-year investment from GRDC to combat this problem. Can you tell us about the scientific process behind it and how you use the bacteria in insects or endosymbionts?
So what we do is we go out into the field and collect aphids from all around Australia and bring them back into the lab. And we actually use a process called microinjection to transfer these endosymbionts between aphid species. So we take an aphid that's got an endosymbiont of interest and we transfer those endosymbionts to our pest aphid species. And once we've done that, we will then take them up to our molecular lab and screen their DNA to make sure that they have the endosymbiont that we're interested in. And once that's confirmed, then we will take them back into our lab and run some experiments to see what the endosymbionts do on the aphids. And we're looking for effects that might be useful to control their populations. So things like reducing their reproduction and reducing the ability of the aphids to spread plant viruses.
So what sort of insect pests are we talking about?
So we're targeting really important agricultural pests in Australia, and that will include the diamondback moth, red-legged earth mites, corn earworms, and a few different aphid species, including the green peach aphid. And so these cause a lot of damage, and it's due to either the viruses that they spread to plants or through direct feeding damage. So in the case of aphids, they can multiply really, really rapidly and overrun the plants. And these other pests can just feed directly on the leaves and reduce yields.
So once you've developed the science behind the endosymbionts, how will it be trialled?
So what we do when we've found an endosymbiont strain that we think might be useful and beneficial to growers, we will start trialling it under lab conditions first in a really controlled environment, and then we'll take it to larger scale tent or greenhouse trials. And what we want to do is we want to see if we release this aphid strain into a greenhouse environment, will the endosymbiont spread and will it actually reduce the amount of damage that's doing to crops? And so we're looking for effects on virus transmission and reproduction. And so we want to make sure that if we release this aphid strain, that will actually reduce the ability of the aphids to spread viruses or cut its reproduction. And we want to make sure that if we do any sort of release of this endosymbiont strain, that it will actually be beneficial to growers.
As part of Melbourne University's groundbreaking trial on endosymbionts, for the first time ever, research will be conducted into the behaviour of pest aphids. Emphasis is being placed on endosymbionts in aphids as they have the potential to block the transmission of plant viruses. I spoke with Eloise Anserman, a PhD student working under Dr. Ross, to find out about the behaviour of pest insects. Eloise, you're specifically studying the behaviour of pest aphids, which have been micro-injected with the endosymbionts.
So this is a very new area. The common traits that have been studied are more linked to the survival of aphids. I couldn't find any studies whatsoever that included the behaviour in this kind of a system.
What are your studies finding so far? Can you give us an example?
So there is a specific moment that I could focus on, which is the colonization of a new plant, because they have to choose which surface of the plant they prefer to stay on. In more specific terms, I would call that a microhabitat within a single plant. For this purpose, I use bok choy plants. And if you visualize a bok choy plant in its early stages, you have some leaves, and the leaves have two surfaces. The upward-facing surface, it's usually a bit darker and sometimes waxy, and the downward-facing surface. And if you ask anybody, farmers probably know this already, aphids are usually found in the downward-facing surface of the leaves. This for different reasons, mainly potentially for protection, because it's definitely a more protected surface against weather or other factors like that. So what I wanted to understand is that, okay, let's transfer this facultative endosymbiont called Rickettsiella, so this bacteria, into a clone of green peach aphid that doesn't have that originally. And let's see if this preference for microhabitat changes. And what I found is that, surprisingly, the aphids that were infected with this bacteria, they still prefer the downward-facing surface of the leaves. However, this preference is not as striking as the other aphids. It means that you might find more aphids on top of the leaves, so you can find them a bit more easily if you want. So that was my main findings.
So what does that mean for growers?
So for growers, that definitely helps early detection, because if you see the aphids first, I mean, you can detect them first, and early detection is a successful detection, I guess. You can take appropriate measures sooner, which is great. But also, this is just speculation because I don't know about the consequences yet. This is going to be my next steps. But being on the upper surface of leaves definitely leaves the aphids more exposed to whatever. So what will happen is that I will try to see if they're more vulnerable to predators, for example. This is a possibility. or also maybe the fact that they are on top of the leaves changes somehow their chemistry and they perform better or worse. So this is the kind of studies that I would like to undertake in the future. Another possibility is that for the simple reason that they are on top of the leaves, the application of any kind of chemical control would be potentially more efficient, especially for contact pesticides. So that is what I think is the main takeaway from this study and applied on the field, although it's just speculation.
That was Eloise Anserman, a second-year PhD student at the University of Melbourne, giving us an insight into further new studies with the Endosymbiont Research Program. And while the study behind this trial is what AgPIP have confessed, a blue sky approach, the endosymbionts could be a game changer for the future of agriculture.
So I'm really hopeful that we'll be able to have a difference in agriculture. And it's really promising because we've had a lot of success in other areas. And so I've been working with mainly mosquitoes over the last decade or so, and we've had a lot of success there in using endosymbionts to control dengue fever and other diseases that mosquitoes spread. And we want to take that approach and bring it to agricultural pests. And there's a lot of really big opportunities and a lot of untapped potential in the way that we use endosymbionts. So really, this is just the beginning in terms of what we can do, but it's a matter of finding the right type of endosymbiont and put it in the right system. So endosymbionts are basically a potential alternative approach to traditional control measures like insecticides. And I guess we envision that these aphid strains or any other insect strains that we develop won't be a silver bullet. It'll be, you know, we're hoping that will be useful, but it should always be used in conjunction with other control approaches as well.
So, Perrin, this is a national approach. There's quite a lot of different areas within Australia, different climates and conditions, different soil types. How do you manage these pests across the board for the whole of Australia?
So we're hoping this approach can be useful anywhere in Australia, but the interesting thing about endosymbionts is that they're quite sensitive to different environmental conditions. And so we found that in some of our lab experiments, if you expose the aphids to high temperatures, then that can actually change the effects that the endosymbionts have. So when we do our lab experiments, we have to keep in mind that when we're doing these experiments, that we want to make sure that we're using the correct environmental parameters. And then when we take it to the greenhouse experiments, we want to see how the endosymbionts behave in a more natural scenario.
What about a national database?
So at the moment, we're compiling a list of all the effects that endosymbionts have on our aphid strains. And once we've done that, that will inform how we can use them in the field. And if we develop any strains for release, all of that information will be available to the growers.
That was Dr. Perrin Ross from the University of Melbourne's Pest and Environmental Adaptation Research Group, and earlier, PhD student Eloise Anserman, both discussing new novel pest solutions, endosymbionts. For more information, visit the AgPIP website at caesaraustralia.com. And if you or anyone you know would like to contribute insect pest samples for testing, follow the link in the show notes on where to send them. This is a GRDC podcast. I'm Camilla Plunkett. Thanks for listening.